I'm not the kind of writer that wants to keep my characters the same in every book. I believe very strongly that they should develop as people develop in real life, and that each book should be something of a journey for them, leaving them different at the end to the beginning. So at the end of Needlepoint, Cameron is somewhat different to how she was at the beginning. She's worked her way through some of her losses. She's a little less angry, and she's a little bit more prepared to face life. However, that's not to say that she's not flawed. She's still pretty bad at relationships, and her relationship with Helen doesn't last much longer than 6 months. As Breaking Point opens, she's coming back from Amsterdam, and she's had a big, big bust-up with Helen, and she's not very happy. Not only that, but the weather's taken a turn for the worse, and the ferry coming across from Rotterdam has been diverted from Hull, where it should have landed, to Immingham. So Cameron's got to travel an extra 30 or so miles through a very dense fog. And Breaking Point starts where she's just coming up to the Humber Bridge. And to say the least, she is not a happy bunny. The Juggernaut swept past in a shroud of dirty spray and dissolved into the greyness ahead, leaving me wet and miserable in its wake, and straining to see ahead as I picked my way along the near-deserted road on my Harley. I felt lousy. My holiday had ended suddenly after the row with Helen, and my mood, already black, had been made worse when the ferry was diverted across the Humber. Now the weather was slowing me down as well, and soaking me to the skin. For a moment I was so buried in myself that I lost my bearings completely. Then, as I strained my eyes to see ahead, the grass verge gave way to a crash barrier, and within seconds I was driving under the enormous south gantry of the Humber Bridge. It towered through the mist, disappearing far into the sky above me. The bridge is massive, more than a mile across, and in that weather I soon lost track of how far I had gone. I could just make out watery headlights on the opposite carriageway, and I knew that by now I must be high over the estuary. But the fog was so thick that I could see no more than 10 feet, and at the speed I was going, it would be several minutes before I reached the toll booths on the other side. Most of the ferry's container traffic seemed to have passed me by now. I was alone, just me and my machine, cut off from the rest of the world. So the sudden flash of headlights and the high-pitched screaming of a horn sent my head reeling in panic, and my bike veering towards the crash barrier. Instinctively, I pulled back onto the straight and held the machine steady as the dark blue MGB Sport shot through the gloom beside me, water cascading off its soft top, carbon dioxide spiralling out of its twin exhaust. It was going too fast, maybe 60 miles an hour against my 10, its headlights ricocheting off the mist, the blare from its horn dripping to a lingering whine as it shot ahead of me and disappeared into the blanket of grey. My heart was pounding now, my head exploding with anger. Fucking idiot! I gunned the Harley and gave chase, picking up the thin grey outline of the car again as it careered back and forth across the road. For a few moments I felt marginally better, but even if I caught it there was nothing I could do. So I dropped my revs, slowing back to a safe speed, breathing deeply, calming myself down. One crazy driver was enough, and slowly my heartbeat returned to normal. The fog was even more impenetrable by the time I picked up the sombre warning from the foghorn on the mid-channel buoy. I slowed down to a crawl now, peering through the gloom, keeping close to the crash barrier, and praying that no other idiot would come up behind me at speed. And thank God I was going so carefully. The MGB, which had passed so recklessly, was slewed across the road, its doors hung open, its headlights shining out into a wall of fog. I braked and pulled into the side, cursing the driver, as another juggernaut, its horn blaring, its lights flashing angrily, sliced through the air beside me. I ripped off my helmet, shaking with shock. Of all the stupid, dangerous things to do. I pulled my bike onto its stand, switched on the trafficators, and ran to the car. It was empty. The driver had gone. Fucking stupid, irresponsible idiot. I leant quickly into the passenger side and switched on the hazard warning lights, then closed the doors and climbed over the crash barrier at the side of the road to seek the relative safety of the cycle track below. It was a crazy thing to do, I know. If I'd been more clear-headed, I would have got back on my bike and driven to the toll booths with a warning. But I was wound up, and despite my anger, I was still concerned for the driver of the car. The bridge has more than its fair share of suicides. It was hard not to come to the obvious conclusion. So I made my way carefully down the steep metal ramp onto the wide cycle track alongside the carriageway and shouted out, "Hello, are you all right?" The mist seemed to close in around me, shutting me in and muffling my voice like I was shouting into a cardboard box. I yelled a second time and stood very still, listening, searching the gloom all along the low railings at the edge, half expecting to see someone sitting on them, preparing to jump, and wondering what I would do, what I would say. And then, as the mist swirled around me, I heard her scream. She was some yards along the track. Her voice was faint, muffled by the blanket of fog, but she was unmistakably desperate. I shouted back, and as she screamed again, I hurried towards the sound, my heart thumping. It was then that the mist began to part ahead of me, and for just a second, time froze. She was no more than 10 yards away, at the very edge of my vision, a mere shadow struggling against the railings, struggling frantically against another, bigger shape. She was kicking out with her feet, twisting her body, fighting to stay on the bridge, fighting to stay alive. She held on to the railings, floundering in mid-air, and slowly, inescapably, she was being forced over. "Hang on," I heard myself screaming. I was momentarily petrified by fear, but unable to ignore her plight. She screamed again as the fog closed in around them. Then something inside me took over, and I was running. The big bridge seemed to give beneath my feet as I propelled myself forward, my boots splashing through the water on the cycle track. As the mist cleared a second time, I saw the man glance towards me, a scarf covering his face. I hoped to God he would run, but he didn't. Instead, quite calmly, he pulled a knife out of his coat, flicked it open, and brought it up hard into her stomach. Well, Cameron does actually manage to stop the man killing the woman, but she gets into all kinds of trouble because of this. Before she goes into a coma, the woman gives Cameron a message, and the police turn up, and Cameron becomes the chief suspect. So she has to find out who actually attacked the woman in order to clear her own name. While she's doing that, she meets somebody who is to become a friend called Bino, and she has a peculiar relationship with a woman called Angel. And she meets the obstructive boss of an animal research lab, and a whole load of militant animal rights protesters. And on the way, she confronts more of her own demons, and something very uncomfortable from her past.